Yeah. Come on in. Come on in. Yeah. Come on in. Come on in. Come on in. What's going on, guys? It's me, Tariq Nasheed. We're live right here on Tariq Radio. Today's broadcast is brought to you by Darien Lending. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or if you are looking for a mortgage or if you want to refinance your current home, they got you covered over there at Darien Lending. Give them a call at 310-774-2601. That's Darien Lending, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to chop up some very good game on today's broadcast. What I'm going to need the family to do is hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. You got to hit that thumbs up button, hit it hard, and then retweet this and repost this on your Facebook. Let everybody know we're live right now because we're going to make it do what it do. So family, while we're getting that together, let's take us a quick commercial break. And we will be right back to Tariq Radio right after these messages. Don't move a muscle, family. Do not move a damn muscle.
Listen up, squares. You need to get the legendary book on game, The Art of Mackin', by author Tariq King Flex Nasheed. Available on Amazon right now. Can you dig it? This book has been a bestseller for 20 years, Jack. And the New York Times called it a classic. That means it's out of sight. So this book ain't for no lames who ain't trying to learn the game, jive turkeys. So if you're ready to stop slacking in your mackin', get The Art of Mackin' book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble right now, sucker. Rated PG. That stands for plenty of game, jive chumps.
Ladies, are you suffering from hair loss? Has alopecia been a battle that you just can't win? Well, you need to check out She and Her Hair Studio because that's the solution for you. They're located in Staten Island, New York, and She and Her Hair Studio is the North Shore's premier salon. It's a full-service salon created solely to provide clients with a comfortable, safe, and unforgettable experience. Check them out right now at sheandherstudio.com. Give them an email at sheandherstudio@gmail.com right now.
Are you looking to start your own business? Millions of brothers have turned to eBay to escape the rat race. Become your own boss and get the Power Seller Research eBook. It's a comprehensive, step-by-step guide that explains how to start an eBay business. The website is powersellerresearch.com. Again, that's powersellerresearch.com.
Celebrate the foundational Black American culture of freedom fighting and resistance with the first annual Arrestasse 5K run. This cultural experience will honor our FBA ancestors and icons while harnessing energy from our past to power our future. There will be security at this event to ensure everyone has a safe and enjoyable experience. Arrestasse Run is a cultural event for family and friends. Strollers and wheelchairs are welcome. The in-person event will include a free one-mile fun walk and will be held on December 17th in Tampa, Florida. Unable to make the live event? You can also participate virtually anywhere from December 17th to December 30th. All registered participants will receive the official Arrestasse Run finishing medal, t-shirt, and more with the ability to upload their race time to the official site. Live event participants will receive the time race scores, professional finisher photo, video, and your name will be announced as you're welcomed across the finish line. Enjoy the post-race after party and refuel with a traditional FBA breakfast. You can also help us settle fun family debates like sugar or salt and grits. Prepare with family workouts and runs and post on social media using the hashtag ArrestasseRun. For registered info and sponsorship opportunities, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Click the link in the bio. Hope to see you all there.
Do you have a small business or do you want to start your own business? Do you need business development and sales support services? You're tired of your dead-end job and you need a new career? Reach out to my brother Junius James at Junius James Incorporated. He has a nonprofit organization in Milwaukee that specializes in empowering the black community. Give him a call at 1-855-JUNIUS-JAMES. That's 855-586-4875. They are a black-owned business and they're down to provide services nationwide. Give them a call right now for some employment opportunities. What's up, family? You guys need to check out this cookie company out of Houston, Texas called The Cookie Confidant. Man, they sell these beautiful, delicious, huge cookies right out of Houston, Texas, man. And the brother has been in business since 2017. And I've tried these cookies, man. They are bomb, bomb, bomb. Very delicious. My personal favorite are the chocolate chip pecan cookies, man. They are bomb. Y'all need to go to cookieconfidant.com. to get these cookies. Black-owned company, man. They got chocolate chip peanut butter cookies, white chocolate cookies with sprinkles, man. So anything you like in a cookie, they got it. So again, go to cookieconfidant.com. That's cookieconfidant.com. Check out Divine Essential Minerals right now. Divine Essential Minerals is a black-owned vitamins and minerals supplement business that offers a variety of high-quality vitamins and minerals in capsule form. Capsules such as sea moss infused with bladderwrack, burdock root, elderberry, lion's mane, dandelion root, and many, many more. Use the coupon code Tariq15 to get 15% off at checkout. Invest in your healthcare and your self-care right now by going to DivineEMinerals.com. Again, that's DivineEMinerals.com.
Bro, stop playing and start spraying. Leave an op on the ground where you stand. At all costs, yeah, make sure you protect it. Old goon juice, the formula been tested. You can defend yourself if you find that you need a little help. Gotta stay ready, ain't no love in the street. Pepper spray straight to the face, make them get weak. Get it at oldgoonjuice.com. If they thinking you slipping, then tell them to come get them some. If you packing this, you won't be lacking. A shot to the eye in them problems you having. Maximal strip, hit them haters on ground. So you can feel free when you out in the town. Old goon juice and don't forget a shirt, man. You gotta stay ready, that evil on lurk. Yeah.
Let's get down to it.
You are now tuned in to the godfather of the game. Often imitated and always celebrated.
Stop sloganeering. Sloganeering kills people.
Hey yo, check this out. It's
Tariq Nasheed on Tariq Radio.
Let's go. Let's go.
Be my goddamn summer law.
Oh, we're back. We're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. Glad to have y'all tuning in. Family, how are you guys doing? How has your week been, ladies and gentlemen? I hope you guys had a very productive and constructive week. I hope everything was positive. I hope everything works and has worked in your favor. Glad to have y'all tuning in. I'm doing the show kind of late this week, aren't I? But I'm here. We're here. We're doing the weekly broadcast and we're here. Before we get started, I got to thank everybody who has contributed to the Kickstarter campaign for the new movie American Maroon. And I ask that the good family here click on the link right there below in my profile there and contribute today. Put something on the production of the new film, American Maroon. You know, we are looking to the community so that we can get all of our constructive films and educational material out there. We cannot depend on anybody in the dominant society to tell our stories for us. We have to tell our stories, and we have to use community-based codification to tell these stories, ladies and gentlemen. It's very important. Speaking of movies, I went to see the new Jurassic Park movie. We saw it last night. Have you guys seen the new Jurassic Park movie? Jurassic World. Jurassic World Domination. The movie was kind of meh. I'm thinking that, you know, it was going to be dinosaurs really, really putting in some work in the streets for real, for real. They showed little montages of the dinosaurs running around here and there, but it just wasn't what I thought it was going to be. It was a very long movie. And the thing that saved the movie for me, it was a very lovely sister in the movie. She was a supporting actor. She played the character in the movie. Her name in real life was DeWanda Wise. She was a beautiful foundational Black American sister. So her vibe and energy saved the film to a certain degree, but there was something in there. They had to throw something in there that they threw some jankiness in there. There was a line that was in the movie that they clearly crowbarred in there, because she was supposed to be a pilot in the movie, just like a real tough sister who's a pilot. And they threw a line in there about the main white character. She was talking to him. The main white character, he's in a relationship with the white female character who's a redhead. And the sister said something about their romantic, you know, situation. And the white man was like, yeah, you know, we kind of got a thing or whatever. And then the black woman said, yeah, I'm into redheads too. So she gave the impression that she was a goddamn stud. I said, oh, Lord. So that was something that was walked down from the corporate brass that they made them put into the script. That was such a janky line to put in there. And then I looked it up and they had her, they're promoting her as the first LGBT character in a Jurassic Park movie. I'm like, man, really? Really? Stop. They really had to crowbar that nonsense in there. When it comes to us, they're just not going to let us be fly. They're not going to let us do things in a beautiful way. There always has to be a twist to it. They always have to promote us in a way that's going to promote non-procreative sexual activity. That's what it's for all about. And speaking of that, did y'all see the story about, oh Lord, this right here, ladies and gentlemen, this right here. NFL, hold on, let me go up. First openly trans NFL cheerleader to make her debut. So they got a black man up here talking about he's a trans woman and they're going to make him the first black trans, well, the first trans cheerleader. They always use us to Trojan horse their agendas in. They have to piggyback it on black folks. So they got this black man promoting him as the first black trans woman cheerleader. Anything that has to do with non-procreative sex, they got us front of the line for this stuff. Family, this is why we have to promote and create our own media, our own films, our own propaganda. We have to use our propaganda is not bad as long as we control the propaganda. This, ladies and gentlemen, is why we have to control the narratives of what we see. Right now, these white supremacists are in overload with the way they portray black people. They're not going to show a heterosexual black man or black woman together raising heterosexual children. They're just not going to show that. They're not going to show that at all. Every time they show us in the media, they're going to put a trick bag on it. This is why it is so, so, so important that we control our media narrative. So family, again, this is one of the reasons why I need the family to support the movie American Maroon. All we're trying to get is 80K. That's all we need to finish the editing, and we're almost at 20K right now. So we got a few more weeks, but it would just be great if we can go ahead and get that knocked out now, so that we can have everything ready, so that we can get this media narrative out here so that your children can see it. It's very important that our children see black men and black women who are heterosexual, not to denigrate any person because of their sexuality, but promoting non-procreative sex, that's a very dangerous thing, and that's a very deliberate thing because they don't want us to procreate. Let's be very real. If you look at commercials now, they don't show. I've not seen a commercial with a black man and black woman. When was the last time you seen a commercial with a black man and a black woman with some damn black kids? You'll see a commercial with a white woman and a black man, or a black woman with a white man, or two black men, or a black man and a white man. You understand? we really have to get in control of our propaganda. We have to get in control of our media. And this is what we're doing now. This is why you support grassroots media. We're needed now more than ever, ladies and gentlemen. Especially now, and let's talk about what's going on today. They're having these hearings about the January 6th insurrection that happened a couple of years ago, where all of these white supremacists got together and tried to overthrow the damn government and went into the Capitol building, beating up people, abusing police. And I want you to look at the picture on the screen right here. These are these white supremacists being allowed by the police. You see, the police is basically has his hand out, treating them with kid gloves. These police officers, so many of them were in on it, and that's the trick bag that nobody really wants to talk about. So many of these officers were in on that insurrection. They were in on it. Now, let's also be clear. They're talking about, they got these insurrection hearings going on right now. And a lot of it is all cap. They're not going to really do anything. This is all political theater. This is a way for some of the Democrats to throw darts at the Republicans. They only bring up some of these white supremacist groups if they can get political mileage out of it, if they can get political brownie points out of it. Like the white man on here with the horns on his head, the QAnon shaman, that's his name. He almost became the mascot of the resurrection. Of the insurrection. I said resurrection, I'm sorry. He damn near became the mascot of the insurrection. That white boy there. Now, his face is all over the media. He only got 3 years, by the way. The white boy with the horns, he only got 3 years for this thing. Let's put this in context. Black Panthers from 50 years ago who sat in a room and just talked about stopping the government from harming black people, they're in jail now from 50 years ago. You got Black Panther members who never ran into no Capitol building, who didn't do anything. They just sat in a room and they were bugged by J. Edgar Hoover talking about what they should do to stop this racial terrorism, and they're still in prison 50, 40 years later. And these white boys actually did it. They actually tried to overthrow the government, and they're getting the equivalent of jaywalking punishments. Again, this is all political theater. They're not going to do anything to these white supremacists. They're not going to do anything to these white supremacists. They didn't punish any of these people. I want y'all to be clear. When you look at some of the hearings, they got people crying and giving testimony how they were abused and beat up and how cops were beat up. And let me play some of the clips of that. Let me play some of the clips of that, ladies and gentlemen. Let me play some of the clips. Hold on 1 second. And when they mention the Proud Boys, now they want to talk about white supremacy. Give me a break. Hold on. Let me turn off my Mac and music here. Let me play this. Let me play this clip here. Hold on 1 second. Listen to this. Hold on.
Individuals associated with two violent extremist groups have been charged with seditious conspiracy in connection with the January 6th attack. One is the Oath Keepers. They are a group of armed anti-government extremists. The other group is the Proud Boys. They promote white supremacist beliefs and have engaged in violence with people they view as their political enemies. Members of both groups have already pled guilty to crimes associated with the January 6th attack. Mr. Quested, as part of the documentary you've been filming, you gain access to the Proud Boys and their leader, Enrique Tarrio. Your crew filmed them in Washington, D.C.
Let me take that back. Hold on.
And their leader, Enrique Tarrio, documentary you've been filming, you gain access to the Proud Boys and their leader, Enrique Tarrio.
Okay. All right. I wanted to play that part again where they're trying to put all that on Enrique Tarrio, the leader. Let's be clear. Enrique Tarrio is not the leader of the damn Proud Boys. We get let's unpack some of this stuff that was just said. The first thing to unpack is that Enrique Tarrio is not the leader of the Proud Boys. That's one of their mascot Sambos that they put out there as a mascot to use his some of the darkness of his skin to hide behind so they could say that they're not a white supremacist group. That's another tactic of these white supremacist groups. They'll get some dark Latino who identifies as white and push them in the forefront and say, hey, we're not a racist group. We're not white supremacists. That's our leader right here. Our leader is a black Hispanic. He's an Afro-Hispanic. Our leader is black. So yeah, how could we be a white supremacist group and we got a black leader? See, they use these immigrants. This is why, family, it is so important that we have identified our foundational black American culture and let folks know just because somebody got melanin, that ain't one of us. See, this is why us identifying our ethnic group, that has thrown a monkey wrench in a lot of the white supremacist games. Because now they can't sit up here and get these tethers from all over the place who come from countries who have jealousy and vitriol towards us and use their melanin as a shield for themselves. We're not letting them do that. That's why understanding and acknowledging foundational black American culture is so very important. And they'll get Enrique and sit up here and try to make him seem like he was some kind of shot caller. He was a mascot. He was never the leader. He was just a mascot. And what they do is throw their mascots under the bus. And they've been throwing all of the dark-skinned mascots under the bus this week as far as these hearings. There's another one, Ollie Alexander. Here's another one. Let me get some other information on him before I show him. But yeah, there's another cat, Ollie Alexander, who's an anti-FBA tether. Oh, let me get some receipts on him real quick. Let me get some more receipts on him before I show that guy. Hold on 1 second. Oh, I should have had some more receipts already in the can, but hold on. Hold on 1 second. Because they're all of their tethers, boy, they're getting them out the paint. God, where's his receipts? I think he might have gotten taken down. He might have gotten taken off Twitter. I'm looking for his Twitter because he used to troll me all the time. Hold on. I think he might have got suspended. Where's this dude? Okay, here it is. Oh, I got it. Got his ass. I got it. Okay, so right here, let me show y'all this guy here. They're labeling him Ollie Alexander. Where is he? Where is he? Right here. Ollie Alexander. They're saying he's having a meltdown. He's on some other platform that on Trump's Truth Social platform. They say he's having a hissy fit right now because his name is coming up in these hearings. They're labeling him as one of the organizers, the January 6th organizer. He was another one of their black mascots or dark-skinned mascots. I won't even call him black. As the committee presented new evidence, Ollie Alexander seems to be losing his mind on Trump's social platform. As the January 6th committee, tasked with investigating the Capitol riots, presented its case to the American people, January 6th organizer and Stop the Steal leader, see, they're calling him a leader. He ain't no leader. He's a mascot. He's having a meltdown. So that's him. They're throwing him under the bus. He was one of these dark-skinned tethers. He's one of these dark-skinned tethers that they used to hide their racism behind. And again, he's another one. I've been calling him out for years. This is me. I pulled his receipts up for years. Right here, this is Ollie. I pulled up his paperwork, some of his jail records, him with the ultra perm right here. He's a wannabe white supremacist, a thief, a troll, and a burglar. I done pulled receipts up on him. All right, so I've been clowning him, letting folks know who he was. Where is he from? I forgot where he's from. He's from, I want to say somewhere over there by India, Bangladesh, or Pakistan somewhere. I can't remember where he's from. Damn, where is he from? I'm trying to pull my receipts up, but this guy is from somebody help me in the room. Yeah, he looks like an East Indian Sammy Davis Jr. But I want to say he's from Pakistan. He's from somewhere over there. Somewhere over there in the Middle East. He's a self-hating Middle Eastern dude somewhere. He's from over there, somewhere near the Middle East. And he has vitriol for foundational Black Americans. And now they're throwing their dark tethers under the bus right now. They're throwing their dark tethers under the bus. And Enrique, let's be clear, like I said, Enrique Tarrio, and I always point this out, don't ever let them say that this dude is Black. Don't let them promote this dude as some kind of Black person. I pulled receipts on this guy years ago when he was arrested before. This is him right here. I pulled up his arrest record, and you look on it, on his arrest record, it's W. He has white. All right, you see that W, race white. So on his arrest record, just like most Cubans, they identify themselves as white. So he identify himself as white. All right, he identifies himself as white. Don't let them run around talking about he was Black or he's a person of color. Miss me on all that. Psychologically, he identifies with white and white supremacy. That's why he was allowed to be in a white supremacist organization. These white supremacists like playing these little double speak game. See, we have to understand the game and not go for that. These white supremacists will say anything. They have no integrity. They have no decorum. They will say anything in order to get something over on you, in order to deceive you. White supremacy is about deception, ladies and gentlemen. Our job is to not let these white supremacists deceive us. Because what happens is we don't want to challenge them, because a lot of Black folks are scared, because these white supremacists, when they can't deceive you, they'll start trying to use muscle on you. And that's what scares niggas. So Black folks go along with the deceit because you don't want to challenge them, because they might get buck on you. No, don't be afraid. And let's be clear with the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. These people know that they are white supremacist organizations. They know how dangerous they are. They knew how dangerous they were. I've been talking about how dangerous these white supremacist groups were for half a decade. They are fully aware that these folks have been working with law enforcement. Everybody was perfectly fine with it. That's because as long as they were working with the police to target Black folks, everything was hunky-dory. Everything was cool. Nobody had a problem with it. They know exactly who they are. The white supremacists try to play dumb. They're not dumb. And Black folks don't play dumb with these white supremacists. Because right now there's another article, before I go back into them, where they're talking about how white supremacist groups are getting riled up on social media. This article came out today with the Associated Press. White supremacists are riling up thousands on social media. Right here. Look at the benign neglect in this article, by the way. Social media posts are of a distinct type. They hint darkly that the CIA and the FBI are behind mass shootings. They traffic in racist, sexist, and homophobic tropes. They revel in the prospect of white boy summer, meaning white boys shooting up everybody. White nationalists and white supremacists on accounts often run by young men are building thriving macho communities around social media platforms like Instagram, Telegram, and TikTok, evading detection with coded hashtags and innuendo. Stop. Stop it. They're not evading anybody. They know exactly who these people are. Now check this out. Their snarky memes and trendy videos are riling up thousands of followers on divisive issues, including abortion, guns, immigration, and LGBT rights. This is the white liberal media using benign neglect against Black people. Notice they mention everybody except their main targets, which are Black people. this article sat here talking about white supremacist groups, and they just completely ignored their main title, the targets. We are the main targets of these white supremacists. If you look online, all these people do is yell the N-word all day. That's all they do. All day they sit around yelling the N-word, 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 N-word. All day they sit around yelling the N-word. Talking about us, yelling the N-word about us all day, every day. That's all these people do. And they completely ignored that, ladies and gentlemen. See, that's part of the benign neglect policy. They know who these white supremacists are, and this whole thing about them not being detected, that's another cap too. They know these, let me tell you something, family. These white supremacists are not some type of criminal mastermind geniuses that's operating somewhere in a secret lair in Switzerland where they can't be detected. These are little hillbilly white boys sitting in a trailer park somewhere in Montana, yelling the N-word all day, sitting up here collecting guns. Everybody knows who they are. These people are easy to find. They know exactly who they are. Law enforcement knows who they are. That's why every time you see some white supremacist harassing some black family and the police shows up, the police always knows the white supremacist by their first name. Hey, come on, Bob. Yeah, I gotta, can't let you do that, Bob. Come on, Bob. You can't harass this family. I can't let you do that, man. You're taking it too far, Bob. They know who these people are, man. The white supremacists who shot up the black people in Buffalo. Law enforcement knew who he was. He was corresponding with law enforcement. He was corresponding with the federal agent. The federal agent was helping him with the terror attack. Come on, black folks. Don't let these people run game on us. We got to be on top of our game. They love acting like these white supremacists are just so evasive. Oh my God, we didn't know. They were using their clever memes and all of their little snarky talking points. They evaded us with their catchy new little lingo. Stop it. Stop it. They love doing that when there's a white supremacist who's targeting black folks. Just like with Jeffrey Dahmer. I always bring this up. Jeffrey Dahmer, they sat up here and let that man kill and eat black folks for decades. He's up here killing black folks and eating them for decades. And they sat up here every time they talk about Jeffrey Dahmer. Oh, he was we're trying to get into the mind of Jeffrey Dahmer. How was he able to evade law enforcement for so long with his criminal masterminding of crimes? And stop it. He just moved into a black neighborhood. The black people knew what was up with Jeffrey. They were telling the police, hey, something's going on with this guy. They just ignored him. He used his whiteness to his advantage. That's a part of white supremacy. When you do something to black folks, law enforcement has a policy of just looking the other way. These people are not no damn criminal masterminds at all. They just have the privilege and benefit of white supremacy, and white supremacy protects them. White supremacy is a protected class. So going back to the Proud Boys, them running around talking about the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and all they didn't know, and oh, their leader. They know that Gavin McInnes was the main guy. He's the real founder of the Proud Boys. He's a suspected white supremacist who founded Vice, and they don't like to talk about that because Vice is a liberal media outlet. See, I've been talking about the Proud Boys for half a decade and the Oath Keepers. Let me bring up some receipts, ladies and gentlemen. Let me bring up some receipts. I've been talking about these folks for years. The Oath Keepers, let me show y'all some of my old tweets, family. This is why I like to show receipts. This is me talking about the Oath Keepers going all the way back to 2015. I've been talking about how they're connected with law enforcement, these white supremacists right here, because I remember them being out there in Ferguson. This is 2015. I said, now the police in Ferguson have allowed the suspected white supremacist group, the Oath Keepers, to patrol the areas, the protest areas. By the way, this is 2015. Most of the suspected white supremacist Oath Keepers in Ferguson are a part of law enforcement. I've been saying that for half a damn decade. If I knew this a half a decade ago, they knew this stuff now. This is not new. This is not news. They knew that the Oath Keepers were a part of law enforcement. They knew they were white supremacist groups. So don't act shocked that they tried to overthrow the government with the help of the police. And even before that, I talked about them being down with Clive and Bundy when they were pointing their guns at the government and the police. I've been pointing out these ain't nothing but white supremacist groups. They were perfectly fine as long as the targets were black people. Going back to the Proud Boys, I've been calling them out ever since their so-called creation in 2016 and 17. Right here, this is a post from 2017. Here's another group of white supremacists called the Proud Boys. I've been warning people about them early on. Here they are throwing up their white supremacist hand signs. They didn't have Enrique as their mascot leader at the time. They had all white boys in it, so they had to get some non-white mascots to pepper them in. So I've been calling them out. This is another post from 2015. I've been pointing out that Gavin McInnes, the white boy, Canadian white boy, who's the real leader. That's 2017, and he's connected with Vice Media. Vice Media is a liberal media apparatus. Remember, look at these tweets. 2015, 2017. The reason why they tried to ignore this is because they couldn't pin it on a right-wing presidential office. Because at this time, family, remember, Obama was still in office, guys. Remember, 2015, Obama was still in office. Yeah, they had to get Gavin McInnes out the spotlight. They said that he stepped down. How you step down from a terrorist group and then they give you a pass? What kind of stuff is that? That's like, how do you step down from Al-Qaeda? You're in a terrorist group and you get to step down and then your hands are clean. That means law enforcement and the authorities, they're working with these guys. They've always been working with these guys. That's why the real leaders are protected. You see, they've been quiet about these guys. These guys were forming under Obama. They were forming under Obama. So now they keep trying to tie in the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers to Trump. That's the only reason the white media is talking about them now. They get to tie them into Trump. Oh, well, they were corresponding with Trump. Oh, they were Trump's army. They were Trump. It was Trump. It was Trump. It was the right wingers. It was Trump. It was Trump. They get to put it all on Trump. Nah. Y'all not just going to put that on the right wingers and Trump. These guys were out there in these Democratic-run cities because I saw them. This is why I started calling them out. When I would go to these protests, I would see these white supremacist groups out here corresponding with law enforcement. I'm like, whoa, wait, who the hell are these guys and why are they so clicked up with the damn police? I saw that early on. I said, oh, okay, yeah, they've deputized these white supremacist groups to go out here and try to ambush black folks. See, we got to be on top of our game with these people, ladies and gentlemen. It's real out here. We're not going to let them run no trick bag games on us. We're not going to let them try to make it seem like all of this is on the right wingers. Nah. We're not going to do that. And remember, the Proud Boys, they were out there in the Boogaloo Boys. That's another one. They were out there with Kyle Rittenhouse. That's who Kyle Rittenhouse was with, throwing up the little white supremacist hand signals. And they're sitting up here letting Kyle Rittenhouse post all types of nonsense after he didn't kill multiple people and influenced other mass shooters. You see? They keep treating these white supremacists with kid gloves, and then they get into this political theater, which they're not going to do anything about. This is just political theater so that they can throw the dirt on Trump and the right wingers so they can give the impression that they're doing something. They're not doing anything. White supremacists are a protected class, guys. This is why it's up to us to be our own media, to be our own defense mechanism. We have to start defending ourselves. And this is why we have to understand codification. This is why we have to stop getting into petty infighting. I got to address a lot of the stuff that's been going on the Twitter spaces in the last few days. There's been a lot of petty infighting that's been going on where people are beefing and bickering over hashtags and lineage titles and movement titles. There were some people arguing on Twitter space, and I conducted one Twitter space to kind of get some straightening and to kind of be neutral, and I'm still neutral about all the different hashtag promoters. That's what I'll call it for right now. I'm still neutral, but I want us all to understand the importance of how all names and hashtags are relevant and should be used at certain times. It's not an if and or. Everything can be used interchangeably as long as we understand we're talking about the same group. Some people had a problem with the term B1. Some people had a problem with Freedmen. Some people have a problem with this term, that term. And listen, here's the thing. Because a lot of the fighting is really inconsequential and it's really a nothing burger. A lot of these terms, we have to learn that they can be used interchangeably at certain times when we need them to be used. In some instances, when we use the term B1, that means black first, that's a relevant term to use when we're talking about what's going to happen as far as tangibles for black people, and then they want to start prioritizing other groups over us. And when we say black first, that means no, not none of these white groups, none of these Hispanic groups, none of these Asian groups. No, we're going to have to look at black first. So that's a relevant term. When people say descendants of slaves, which that terminology came from my brother Norris Sheldon and others before him, but our brother Norris Sheldon out of Kentucky, he was the one who popularized that descendants of slaves in modern times, and then it was co-opted and stole by some other people. And then they tried to put their own thing on it, and they tried to co-opt it into an organization where they're the leaders of, and you know who that is. But descendants of slaves, that's a relevant term to use at certain times. Freedmen is a relevant term to be used at certain times. Foundational Black Americans, that's a relevant term to be used at certain times. We can use those terms interchangeably. You see, we have to learn how to be codified like that and not get to tripping on, well, I want to use that. No. We have to learn to get on code without having to just lay everything out and explain everything over and over ad nauseum. We have to get over that because white supremacist society, they understand how to use certain codified words without people overtly having to explain what they mean. For example, critical race theory. White supremacists understand that really doesn't have a real definition, but it does have a real definition. It doesn't have a real definition, but it does have a definition. You understand what I'm saying? It doesn't have a fixed definition, but it has a common law definition. Meaning, anything that has something to do with criticizing white supremacy. That's the common law definition of critical race theory. But that's not the literal definition. The literal definition, this is why they make up what the definition is every other week. Every other week, they make up a definition of what critical race theory is. And they deliberately don't give it a real defined meaning because they understand that would kill the power of that term. The power is the vagueness of it. The power of the term critical race theory is how vague it is. The white supremacists understand that. So they're not bickering with each other about the definition. You notice that? They don't bicker with each other. All they know and understand is that the term really, really means anything that criticizes white supremacy. That's what it really means, but they're not going to say that openly. But they understand that. So they throw out all of these jive definitions. Well, critical race theory means hurting the feelings of white kids. Well, critical race theory, that means attacking white teachers. Critical race theory means going into school and making black people feel like they're victims. They just make up definitions, that's more political theater. They understand what it means. Anything that challenges white supremacy is critical race theory. And they don't bicker about that among themselves. You see, we got to stop this thing where we're bickering among ourselves, among things that we should already have an understanding of. What's understood doesn't have to be explained. Now, at certain times, we have to understand certain terms are needed. When we're talking about certain things in the political frame, We can use the term descendants of slaves, that's fine. When we're talking about the culture of us, black people in America, who are non-immigrants, we use the term foundational black American because that term is really seeped into the culture. Understanding our culture is very important. This is why we've gotten a lot of stuff accomplished in a short period of time using the term foundational black American, because that term talks about our culture. It's a defined culture. It's a clearly defined culture. And I've always said, once you understand and define your culture, everything else is going to fall into place. Now, when we're talking about legal things as far as reparations, some people might say, well, we can't use race when it comes to reparations because that will go against the Constitution, having racial set-asides. That's why it's cool to use the term freedmen. See, that's where that term comes in. See, we have to learn how to interchange these terms in different arenas. If we're talking about something from a legal standpoint where somebody might come around and say, well, that's something based on race. Well, no, it's not, because we're talking about reparations for freedmen in this legal document. And freedmen is not about race. It's about a circumstance that happened to a group of people who happen to be black and who happen to be foundational black American. So we're not using the term black. In that instance, we're using the term freedmen. You see, all of it can be interchangeable in certain times, in certain arenas. We have to understand how to interchange the term. But culturally, it's important to use the term foundational black American because that's a term that cannot be remixed. Now, I know my good brother, Professor Black Truth, was giving some very good criticism about the reparations task force out here. And what's her name? Camilla Moore. He was somewhat critical of some of the interviews that she's been doing and her using a lot of vagaries. And it's a very relevant and justifiable criticism. And I know some people got upset with him criticizing her and the reparations task force. Let's be very clear. We have to keep an eye on this reparations task force. We're not in the victory lane yet. We better be very clear. Let's be very clear, black family. That reparations task force, they didn't want to specify that the reparations are going to be lineage based. They didn't want to do that. Let's be real. We got to be realistic. They didn't want to do that. It was the grassroots. It was the foundational black American grassroots that forced them to come to that conclusion, because everybody and all of you guys were on their bumper when they were going to try to pull a trick bag and try to make it race based. They saw that they were going to immediately lose support and be delegitimized. So they had to do what we told them to do. Let's be very clear. This is why, family, we have to watch them. I'm not taking no victory lap. I'm looking at them and everything they say. Whenever they do these interviews, and Camilla Moore, when she does interviews, she's up there with Sharpton and all these people. I always notice she's very vague, and they got people on there who always make a point to talk about, well, reparations shouldn't just be about no check. Reparation can be education. Reparation can be a hug. They always have somebody up there with her talking about everything but some money. I'm looking at that. Oh, no, we're not taking eye off them. We're watching every move they make. We're watching every single move they make, and we have to watch and see if they're going to just try to dangle this carrot in our faces so that we can just keep voting Democrat while they keep making these promises. Well, we got a 500-page document, and then in another year, we're going to have this. No, no, no. We're not going to do that. That's something that we have to call them out to. We're not going to sit up here and just wait another year and for them to let us know what the reparations are going to be. No, while we're waiting another year and then another year and all of this stuff, they're giving money to all of these Hispanics, Asians, Ukrainians, and other groups and LGBT groups. They ain't waiting to give them no money. They're not waiting to give them money. So yeah, we should call them out and let them know. We're not doing no victory laps yet. See, because we got them to do what we wanted them to do as far as making this thing lineage-based, too many of us want to have a party and a pat on the back ceremony where everybody's patting themselves on the back. We're not there, man. We're not there where we got to pat each other on the back, and we have a very bad habit as black people. We get one little inch, and then we want to celebrate for 50 years. No, no, no. We got to stop that whole celebratory thing until we get done what we need done. And we got a long ways to go before we celebrate. That's why black folks are still running their ass down there to Selma. The Democrats love doing that. Every other year, they like to go down there for the Selma anniversary. You celebrating Selma for 60 years. And Selma down there, Selma is an economic mess down there, by the way. But they love running down there, marching up and down the Edmund Pettus Bridge for a couple of hours, taking pictures and celebrating the Civil Rights Bill from 1964. And all of that has been pretty much gutted because those civil rights for everybody except us at this point, the hell we got to celebrate that for? And we don't have the civil rights that we the ones who fought for. You see? So we have to understand how the game works out here. We have to understand the game. See, with these white supremacists, see, they want to sit up here and play the kumbaya game. They want to sit up here and dangle hugs. And no, we don't need reparations. We need hugs and Jesus. And again, what they're going to do, they're going to double down on non-FBA tethers to come out here and try to represent us and misrepresent us. So this is why we have to be on our FBA grind heavy so we can watch out who all of these people are. Any black person who they dangle in front of us, we need to know their background. Because we look around and we see all of these black people popping up. And notice nobody knows where they come from. And then they start talking crazy. See, we need to start knowing the backgrounds of people. And when we have all of these weird tethers who pop up, everybody's sitting around scratching their head like, who is this dude? Where did he come from? Who is his parents? And don't nobody ever know nothing about him. That's why a lot of these people are tethers who are not only just tethers, they were adopted by white people. That's another thing. Some of these people, you can look at their hairlines and tell that they're tethers, but we can't find anything on their parents. It's almost like they're orphans. You can't find nothing on their parents. And they might have an Americanized name. And you're like, who is this dude? He lives in this city, but nobody in the city knows him. Black folks, we have somewhat of a grapevine relationship with each other. Foundational Black Americans, we have a grapevine relationship where black people who are foundational Black Americans, generally, we know who's who to a certain degree. We can kind of put the feelers out and kind of get a vibe on who's who in certain cities. We know somebody who knows somebody's cousin, who knows somebody's uncle, who knows some. That's why I remember back in the day, if even before the internet, if somebody knew a dance in Cleveland, that dance would be down in Alabama within a few weeks. Or if somebody created a dance in DC, that dance would be in California in a few weeks. We would exchange slang terms, fashion terms, dances, because of our FBA connections with each other. But then these weird Negroes pop up out of nowhere and don't nobody know who they are. Even in the city, nobody knows who they are. That's because a lot of them were adopted by white people. White people then went and brought somebody in. And then all of a sudden they pop up as the city council leader or the mayor of some city. I'm like, where did this thing come from? I put up a video earlier where these white people, they adopted this kid or these kids from Sierra Leone. And it's on one of these sites called Good News, something like that. What's this site called? Let me find this real quickly. Called Goodable. So these white people thought they were going to flex with these adopted boys. And they celebrated his first birthday with his new family. So they thought this was a flex. Let me show this clip right here. They thought this was some kind of flex right here. Hold on, right here. I put this on my social media earlier. Abraham was adopted from Sierra Leone. This week, he celebrated his first birthday with his new family. We dare you not to cry. Kindness wins. Now, look at this. Lord, look at this. Hold on, family. Okay, hold on.
Happy birthday, Abraham.
Now, family. Okay, family. Now, in 5 years, this guy right here will be on the city council of some city talking about how foundational Black Americans need to pull themselves by their damn bootstraps. Lord, Lord, Lord. Now, listen, I'm not trying to beat up on the kid too much. No matter, I don't know what his home life was like. It's probably in shambles, but family, he's going to be in a dress in a couple of years. He'll be wearing a dress, or he's going to be running. Yeah, he looked like Michael Blackson a little bit. He'll be running around talking about these niggas are lazy. These lazy Akata niggas. He'll be running around talking about how lazy we are. Family, do y'all see they have broken this boy? He's already broken. This is what these white supremacists do, and then they act like this is some kind of kindness flex. I'm not impressed. This is not an act of kindness. You sitting up here adopting a victim of white supremacy and parading him around like a pet. You want kindness? Fix his damn homeland that you helped destroy. All right? That's the kind part. Bringing him over here and then cultivating him and getting his mind positioned in order to undermine us. These are the people that they use to eventually undermine us, by the way. I'm not impressed at all. He'll be in a dress by next week. I ain't impressed. This is not a flex for me. I am not impressed by this at all. These families who do this, I want y'all to be clear. Just because a white family adopts a black kid, that does not make them any less racist, ladies and gentlemen. Some of the most staunch white supremacists have adopted black children. Paul LePage out of, is that New Hampshire? He's the governor out there. He has an adopted kid. He's racist as hell. That Luann Tui woman out of Louisiana who they did the Blind Side movie about, that's a suspected white supremacist too. These people have wild anti-black views and will sit up here and try to hide behind their adopted black kid. I'm not impressed by that. Having some grateful black person running around here acting like a grateful slave, that's not an impressive thing to me. You think? I am not impressed, ladies and gentlemen. There's already moisture in the picture with this child. There's already some moisture in the picture. It never turns out right. They never turn out normal being around all of these suspected white supremacists. I am not impressed. And I want black folks to get off that Different Strokes, Mr. Drummond stuff. They've been promoting that all the way back in the television shows, Different Strokes and Webster, these benevolent white people getting these poor downtrodden black people and bringing them into the life of luxury. Stop it. I'm not impressed. Remember the Hart family, those white supremacist lesbians kill those black babies? I'm so not impressed. Madonna, oh Lord, Madonna's son. Y'all, I won't even post the pictures. Madonna's adopted African son is running around here in a damn dress right now, addressing some kitten heels. Not impressed. Not impressed at all. Because, man, they use tethers against us. Let me play this. Speaking of reparations, they had this dude right here. Hold on one second. They had this guy here. There's this guy named Michael Austin. They had him on some conservative California radio station talking greasy about our reparations. I want y'all to listen to this. Michael Austin. When I saw this picture, I said, boy, that hairline. So they had him right here. This is the caption. I was on governor with Gavin Newsom pushing his slave reparations plan. I joined Ed Crane in Sacramento to describe how his plan will doom American society. So they put this guy on here. Look at the hairline. They put this guy on here to talk about our reparations. Let me play the clip. Hold on one second.
Sacramento County Sheriff's race. Later today, a task force assembled by Gavin Newsom will release a report, the first of its kind in the U.S., to address the idea of slave reparations and other steps to right the wrongs committed against enslaved blacks generations ago. That's right, you and I and millions who had nothing to do with slavery may be compelled to pay 21st century black Americans for the plight of their ancestors centuries back.
Okay, let me stop for a minute. Okay, let me stop for one quick minute. When they start talking about, oh, we had nothing to do with it, don't let them play that game. Slavery was something that was enforced by the United States government. Don't let them play that game. I had nothing to do with removing Indians or the red Indians from certain reservations or from certain parts of their land, the red natives. I had nothing to do with that, but my tax dollars are used to pay red Native Americans and $5 Indians who ain't really Native Americans to this day. So we're not going to play that game. All of that generations ago nonsense. No, the government is still here. The United States government still stands. The government still exists. The government still has the money generated from the free labor that our family provided. The government is still wallowing in that money. So don't let them run that. That was so long ago, we had nothing to do with it. No, the government had something to do with it. The government is still here. The government is still on the hook. All right, hold on.
Blacks, generations ago.
Hold on.
We'll release a report, the first of its kind in the U.S., to address the idea of slave reparations and other steps to right the wrongs committed against enslaved blacks generations ago. That's right, you and I and millions who had nothing to do with slavery may be compelled to pay 21st century black Americans for the plight of their ancestors centuries back. Joining us with more on this, Project 21 economist Michael Austin, who is a former member of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission. Michael, welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be on.
So give me your thoughts on this. First of
all, Hold on again. Did y'all catch that part? He was a former member of the Civil Rights Coalition. Did y'all catch that part? You see what I'm saying? We, foundational black Americans, our family got their heads bashed in fighting for civil rights for these tethers to come over here, get on these civil rights commissions, and they have all of this anti-FBA vitriol. I want y'all to catch that part right there, where he was a part of a civil rights commission, all right?
Plight of their ancestors centuries back. Joining us with more on this, Project 21 economist Michael Austin, who is a former member of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission. Michael, welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be on.
So give me your thoughts on this. First of all, what kind of money are we talking about?
Well, California's slave reparations plan, if enacted, I think will be not only the largest transfer of wealth this country has ever seen, I think it'll be the largest affirmative action program in the history of the world.
Okay, hold on. I got to slow roll this. Okay. The largest transfer of wealth was our foundational black American family members working for free and having the money taken from them and locked into white society. That is the largest transference of wealth. Money that our family generated that they never got to enjoy. That is the largest transference of wealth. And the largest affirmative action program is white supremacy. White supremacy and Jim Crow, that was affirmative action. That was an affirmative action program for white people. All through the Jim Crow era, and even now, but all through the Jim Crow era, they had open signs saying, whites only. Only white people can work at this job. Only white people can eat at this restaurant. Only white people can own land here. Only white people can buy property or get a housing grant or a housing loan. Only white people can do this. Only white people can get certain benefits. That was the largest affirmative action program. Now understand, this buck dancing Sambo is just using talking points given to him by some white supremacist think tank. All right, let's be very clear. All right, hold on.
So give me your thoughts on this. First of all, what kind of money are we talking about?
Well, California's slave reparations plan, if enacted, I think will be not only the largest transfer of wealth this country has ever seen, I think it'll be the largest affirmative action program in the history of the world. It'll demonize blacks as a people constantly trying to get something without earning it, and I think it may forever deny what all African Americans truly want and desire, respect.
500 pages, I mean, what are they going to take us through here?
Well, let's let's put aside the fact that just placing a multi-trillion dollar deficit spending on top of a 30 plus trillion dollar debt is fiscal suicide. I just think it's going to be exceedingly difficult for everyday Americans to believe that they owe other Americans for what happened 150 years ago.
Okay. I don't want to hear about that, putting that debt on top of another debt. No, they come up with money every day for all of these other groups. Miss me with that. They got billions of dollars for all of these other groups, and it's not affecting our economy in a negative way. That's not destroying the economy. They got money for Ukrainians, Afghanistanians, Asians. They're throwing money at these people every day. That's not harming the economy. Nobody's complaining about that, so they're not going to complain about the reparations that's owed to foundational Black Americans. They're not going to do that either. And this whole thing talking about something for nothing, boy, he got a lot of nerve. Hold on.
They're going to take us through here.
Well, let's put aside the fact that just placing a multi-trillion dollar deficit spending on top of a 30 plus trillion dollar debt is fiscal suicide. I just think it's going to be exceedingly difficult for everyday Americans to believe that they owe other Americans for what happened 150 years ago. You know, if America comes to a place where we are forced to pay a debt that we don't owe, I think this country has reached a point of no return.
Michael, I got to ask you this. You're a Black man. It seems to me that...
And I'm right there. It cut off, and I wanted to see what he was going to say. You caught that little slick, suspected white supremacist. Now, look, now, you're a Black man, so therefore you're going to be the representative of the Black people. You're a Black man. Let me ask you, and I cannot find the rest of the clip of what he asked. I really want to know what he asked him. And again, that's political theater, too. This is just their Negro mascot who they put out here to spew white supremacist talking points. But you caught that at the end. Well, you're a Black man. That fool don't represent foundational Black Americans. Let's be very clear. See, that's what they get these tethers for. They get them out here and use their melanin to hide behind and then try to prop them up as spokespersons for foundational Black Americans. This is why it has been so important for us to differentiate ourselves and our lineage from every other person, because we're sitting up here trying to make us all one big Negro. We get these people who have vitriol towards us, who try to act as our representatives, and they don't have our best interests at hand. And the white supremacists clearly understand this. They understand this fully. Hold on. Now check this out. Now this is the same guy. This is the Michael Austin guy. Oh, I pulled some receipts on his ass. This is Michael Austin. All right. This is Michael Austin. Now, listen to this. If you want to know about Michael Austin and who he is, this is Michael Austin, and this is who he is, ladies and gentlemen. Hold on one second. Let me get it together. Hold on.
Where I came from. So I'm originally from New York. Born in New York, born in Brooklyn, New York City. And, you know, my family, my family for the most part are actually immigrants. We came to America, I think in the mid to late 50s. And we came from, you know, Caribbean and the Central America, as well as England. And going, living in New York City, my parents, where I came from.
So, there you go.
I'm originally.
There you go. Oh, Lord. Boy, man, the tethers are just so predictable at this point. Family, we at this point, we're so thorough now, we can spot tethers a mile away. We can spot these tethers a mile away. See the game he tried to play at first? Well, I'm from New York. See, this is why when we have these spaces sometimes and a lot of tethers come in and they try to play that, well, I was born in Detroit. No, nigga. Where your family from, dude? Yeah, he tried to say New York, and then, you know, he had to break it on down. Nah, he had to break it on down. We can spot tethers a mile away at this point. We know. And then they'll try to be slick and claim they're from Florida. They'll try to claim they're from New York. No. Dig deeper into where their family is from. Well, my mom is from Jamaica. Oh, here we go. That's what I thought. Now, y'all not fooling nobody. You're not fooling nobody. We see you. We see your Samboan, we see your Coonan, we see you ain't one of us. We can tell by your forehead. We can tell, bro. We can tell. Oh, we can tell. Man, this is why, man, we got to keep our foot on their necks, man. We got to stay codified, make sure we have our culture locked tight, make sure that nobody comes in and tether off our culture, make sure that we understand what our culture is, make sure that we promote our culture. This goes back to us understanding the importance of promoting our education. Again, films like American Maroon, which is what we're working on now, going back to that family. Click that link below. Please be a part of the Kickstarter campaign. We need everybody listening right now to please get involved. Hit that link. Whatever you can give today, that would be great. Put something on it, please. Click that Kickstarter link so that we can have education programs like these documentary films to give your children so that they will understand who they are, so they can have confidence in themselves and their history, ladies and gentlemen. Go to the Kickstarter, ladies and gentlemen. Type in American Maroon if you're listening to this off YouTube, but click the link below. Click the Kickstarter. Contribute today, ladies and gentlemen. Also, go to officialfba.com. Subscribe to this channel. Have you guys seen the new character I created? There's a new puppet if you have not seen it. I'm not going to play it here because I want you guys to go to the link on my channel. Go to the puppet. It's called Lame Heligay. That's the new puppet. Very funny puppet. Lame Heligay. That's a new puppet that we have. Very, very funny. People love the Lame Heligay puppet. Y'all go to my YouTube channel if you have not subscribed. Just click the link and check out the Lame Heligay puppet. Check that out. Very, very funny puppet. Anyway, y'all, I'm out of here, man. Y'all have a great weekend. We're still waiting on baby Coco Nisha to be born any day now. We're waiting. We're on baby watch right now. We're on baby watch right now, waiting on our baby girl to come on through. So the due date is in a couple of days. The actual due date is in a couple of days. So we're chilling, waiting. And doing our thing. But much respect to the family, man. Y'all be good. I'm a holla. Papi Akute and Lilavuve to the family. Peace.